From Directions Media, this is Directions on the News for Tuesday, September 13th, 2011. Each week, this podcast looks at news and trends related to all things location. This is Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor in Somerville, Massachusetts.
And this is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief today at the Foster G Conference in Denver, Colorado.
2 weeks ago, ESRI's Joseph Kursky wrote a blog post at the GIS Education Community blog titled, The Top 5 Skills Needed to Be Successful in a GIS Career. We decided to set his list aside and build our own. On today's podcast, we'll discuss our lists of the top 5 skills needed to be successful in a GIS career. We'll start our countdown after a word from our sponsor.
This podcast is brought to you by ESRI. Join us for a free U.S. nationwide seminar to learn how to extend the reach of your GIS. Get more information and register today at esri.com/extendyourreach.
We've compared our lists, and of your list of five and my list of five, there was only one skill that we both identified, and that was communication.
Right.
So tell me about the nature of the communication skills that you're thinking about when you identify communication as a key skill.
What I wanted to focus in on was that it's sometimes hard to explain to somebody what we do as a profession. You know, people say, well, what do you do for a living? Well, I'm a GIS professional. What's GIS? And we go through this process of trying to explain what our profession is, and we're often left with this baseline explanation of people saying, well, hey, do you know what Google Maps is? And everybody goes, oh, yeah, well, that's what I do. I think it demands us to put a little bit more icing on the cake, if you will. I think we need to tell people that geography, much like what Jack Dangerman often says, it is a new language of communication. And I think we need to be able to communicate to people that this is how we talk. This is how we explain information. This is how we derive information that's useful to many different disciplines. And I think it's really upon us as in a profession to explain our 30-second elevator pitch. And I often explain it like this. I often say that, well, you can look at reams and reams of tables, or you can look at one map, and that information derived on the map provides a lot of information. I think we need to be able to better communicate what our skill set is.
Okay, and I guess I want to push it a little bit further. I totally agree with what you've said, but I think the next step is that we are the first line of explanation of those graphics that we create. So if you get up in front of the town council and you've got a map suggesting where the new school should be built, you have to help the individuals in that room understand why this is a good answer. You have to help them interpret it. And that requires excellent oral communication skills. You've got to be very comfortable speaking to people and convincing people and arguing your point and backing up your arguments.
Yeah, that's very true. And you have to understand the parameters within the context of that map that you created. Communicating what went into the end result, I think, is very critical. And some of that, I think, we'll discuss because that relates to some of my other skills that we'll talk about.
And I really need to push that beyond just oral. Of course, we need to be able to communicate in writing. When you're writing a proposal to convince somebody to hire you, you need effective communication skills. If you're going to use any of the social media, from Twitter to Facebook to LinkedIn, you've got to communicate effectively. Again, to either sell yourself to get the job in the first place or to sell the skill set that you and your organization have. I can't emphasize that enough. Well, let's move on to the rest of our list of four. Joe, why don't you start with your other four skills?
Yeah, sure. Let me briefly go down them. I broke my skill sets into two components, one the three basic skills and two the more advanced skills. And to me, that communication skill is an advanced skill. So my other four, starting with the basic skills, are one, programmatic skills. And this, I think, helps prepare your mind for spatial thinking. And I advise taking a course in basic computer programming, and because I think that some of the elements of computer programming, like structured query language, understanding what SQL is, helps prepare somebody with the syntax that underpins the creation of spatial queries. The next one on my list is problem-solving skills. I think I've benefited by taking a calculus. Math is all about problem-solving, and even though some people may groan at having to take yet another math course, I think higher-level calculus really prepared me to think sequentially about the nature of problem-solving. The third one on my list is spatial thinking skills, and I wrestled with this one because it's hard to describe, right? If I tell somebody, hey, you really need to think spatially if you're going to be a GIS person, well, how do I get somebody to do that? I think someone would benefit by taking a course in photography, and I've been a photographer for many years, started at a young age, and I think I understand space fairly well, and I understand how to compose a photographic setting. And that involves knowing about space, geography, lighting, and the confines of what the lens will allow you to do. And a good geospatial analyst must also understand the confines of how to control the space as geography. And then the last one, under the more advanced skills, is to become an expert in a specific discipline. And this may seem obvious to some, but I truly believe that you have to go beyond button pushing. You have to go beyond just learning a GIS software. It helps to be an expert or at least knowledgeable in a particular professional discipline like environmental science, like urban planning, like forestry. I think those are really beneficial, and I would caution against getting a degree in GIS. I would err towards the side of go get a degree in forestry or geology and then learn GIS. So those are the remaining four.
Now, the one that strikes me is your argument about photography as a way of understanding spatial thinking.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think if I know of a GIS program that uses photography as a tool of understanding space.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying it can't be, but tell me about how you would structure a course that uses photography to understand space in the way that geographers use and try to understand space.
Yeah, because to me, photography has many different levels of thinking. And many years ago, I conducted a workshop on the four levels of geographic thinking, and I started at a regional level, I went to a local level, and I went to a street level, and I went to a micro level. Those were my four levels, the regional being statewide. In photography, it's very similar. You can create landscape pictures. You can create still life pictures. Those are two different levels of understanding space and spatial relationships, and I think of it in that context, that I have to understand micro as well as macro composition of photography. And that gives me a feeling of how do I understand spatial objects and the juxtaposition of objects to one another. So I think that suggestion that I have here may be a bit off the wall, but I think people would benefit by an understanding of the juxtaposition of things within a confine, and that's what the lens forces you to do. And we're often forced to constrain our spatial analysis. And
yeah, there's some other interesting things that photography certainly helps you with, and certainly one of them is that sense of scale that you just described. Mm-hmm. And the other, if you like, is the simplification of the world into more or fewer colors. If you go to black and white, you lose some of that information. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of parallels there. That would be a very interesting course. I'd like to take that. I think I looked at the question a little bit differently, and instead of sort of focusing on the skills of GIS, which my hope is that if you work through a certificate program or a degree program at any of the fine institutions in the world that teach it, you're going to get some of that basic information. And my gut feeling is that there are probably thousands of people out there who have terrific skills, and the trick of somebody doing the hiring is to pick out the folks that stand out in that crop of people with this basic set of skills. And what I wanted to focus on were those other skills that I'm going to use to distinguish you from all the rest of the folks who can do those things. The first skill that I want to see is somebody's ability to teach themselves. in these times, while it is absolutely wonderful if your employer can send you to a 5-day training course or a conference where you can be formally taught some new technology or a new technique or about a particular discipline, more and more often that responsibility is falling to you, the employee, and you need to have the skill set and the ability to teach yourself. And whether that's using online tools or audio or however you do it, I need you to be able to teach yourself. Secondly, I want to see skills that suggest to me you work well in a team, because I'm hiring you to work within an organization, and while you may be the only GIS person or you may be one of 100 GIS people, you are going to have to interact. And together, that team is going to have to see the final goal, and you're going to have to work together to get there. And it is of no use to me if you can't participate in that team environment. Thirdly, I want to see somebody who takes action. If they notice something that's wrong, or they notice that something is missing, that they identify it and they try to fix it. Now, sometimes you can fix those things yourselves. Sometimes your role is simply to let your supervisor know that that problem is there. But I want to see people who take action, not people who ignore those kinds of potential problems or potential opportunities. And finally, I want people who are looking to get better all the time, and one of the ways to get better all the time is to find mentors. And those mentors may be your direct supervisors, or they may be your peers, or they may be people in other parts of the organization, or they may be people in other organizations. But those are the kinds of people who can give you that advice and share their experience to help you get ahead. And most of that getting ahead isn't about learning another language or learning another piece of software. It's sort of learning how to navigate this world of work and, in a sense, show off those skills and responsibilities and actions that you've taken to move you further along.
Mm-hmm.
So in a sense, these are very much sort of softer skills, but I think in today's world, that's what's distinguishing the folks who are getting hired and moving up through the ranks from those who are maybe getting hired on as an analyst and are going to be doing pretty much the same thing for the next 5 years.
Yeah. Well, you present an interesting challenge for your first three, because if I was an employer looking to hire someone with the skill sets you mentioned, I think those are very difficult to find within just the confines of a resume. So I'd be curious as to how you go about evaluating somebody like that. So that's my first question. My second question is, I love the idea of a mentor. I'm not sure we've got a great professional development community that does that, and maybe that's what we need to do more of. So I'll pose those two questions to you.
Okay, so your first challenge to me is, how do you evaluate whether or not people have those skills?
Right.
I think it's a lot easier than you might think.
Okay.
What I love to see is, I love it when who are students or who are looking for a job, and when I say, okay, so you took these classes and you did all the required projects and so forth, have you done anything on your own? And somebody says, yes, my son's baseball league needed a map of all the baseball fields in town, and I made the map and I put it up on the web and I used thus and such technology, and honestly I don't care what technology they used, but they used what they knew to go further.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm looking for.
Right.
And I honestly don't care if it was in your hometown, I don't care if it was in India, I don't care if it was mapping all the places that people fly kites, whatever you're interested in, that you have gone a little further. And I even love it more when they say, I taught myself how to use this technology. Right. And honestly, I don't even care if it's GIS technology. Okay? So those kinds of things, that shows a whole lot of initiative, and that also goes back to that ACT thing. In the case of the baseball field, I saw that there was something missing, and I jumped in and solved the problem.
I think students need to be aware that that's a really great thing to put on a resume, to make sure that that's articulated clearly to the employer. I think we're used in a resume to just itemizing, I did this, and not show the initiative. And that's one thing that's a good advice for people.
Absolutely. That's what I'm looking for, and I'll just throw this out. I bet you if you're looking to get into one of those really competitive GIS programs, that's the kind of stuff that they're going to want to see, that you've taken mm-hmm. some initiative to further your education sort of on your own.
Right.
So I think there's ways to see that. And in terms of, you know, teamwork, you know this as well as I do since we're both involved in road racing. You know when you get a good team that has volunteered for your race because they take care of everything. They see what's missing and they go, we don't have enough water. Go get more water or that kind of stuff. So we want to see people with that kind of experience and who have figured out how to be successful at that. And your other question was what?
On the mentoring. Do we have
mentoring.
Professional societies that do a good job in providing mentoring services?
I wish all of the organizations that try to enable mentoring the best, and I have even participated in several of them through the schools I've gone to and organizations that try to get women and girls involved in engineering and science, and more power to you. But I have to be really honest. This is a very personal thing, and the way you pick a mentor is by selecting from all of the people that you know. So people within your organization, and it can be a very formal thing, and you can say, hey, but will you formally be my mentor, and can we get together 4 times a year and see how I'm doing? Or it could be far more informal, where it's sort of as part of your relationship, your friendship, your professional connection, you feel comfortable going to them and saying, hey, can you give me some perspective on how to move ahead with this? All of the mentors I've ever had have been much more informal, and I feel very lucky, and I don't think I've ever run into anybody who said no when I said, hey, can I talk to you about this idea I have? Or can you help me figure out what the next job I might want to have is? Or can you connect me up with somebody? Again, this goes back to that personal initiative. You need to find those mentors. And again, they may or may not be within your organization. They may or may not be within your community. One of the best mentors I have is my best friend's dad, because he was an entrepreneur and started a bunch of companies. And when I ran into a big business question, he was the guy.
You really do need somebody like that.
You do, and sometimes you may want to reach out to people in the community who you don't know and introduce yourself and start creating those relationships, but don't expect somebody else to find the mentor for you. That's your job.
Great advice.
Well, I think what we've put together here is a very different list than what Joseph Kursky put together. But I really want to thank him for starting this conversation and helping us sort of build this big list of skills that everybody might want to try to grow as they move forward either in their education or within their careers within GIS. That's all the time we have for today. Before we go, our sponsor ESRI would like you to know that an update for the ArcGIS for iOS app is available for download from the Apple App Store. This version of the free app includes support for pop-ups, access to ArcGIS online base maps, and new collaboration features. For more information and to download the app, visit esri.com/ArcGIS for iOS.
And from us here at Directions Media, just a few conference announcements. Our call for presentations for the Rocket City Geospatial Conference will end on September 30th, so please submit your presentation proposals as soon as possible. And a new announcement from us, the 2012 Location Intelligence Conference will be held May 22nd and 23rd in Washington, D.C., and will be co-located with the Oracle Spatial Users Conference. More information can be found at locationintelligence.net.
If you'd like to comment on today's podcast, you can send us an email at editors@directionsmag.com, or you can leave a comment on Directions Magazine where this podcast is hosted. Thanks for joining us, and be sure to tell a friend.